You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 627, recorded on Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020, Five Sons from Jason. Wells Tech is a podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Yes, indeed. Today on the show, we are joined by Jason Schmidt, our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, and we talk about some of the things that the pandemic is influencing in our classrooms and some of the things our teachers are considering as they're asking to do some things a little bit differently, some challenging things and some, I think, positive things coming out of all this. We have our news and tech, Wells Now, Picks of the Week, Ministry Resource, great community feedback, and a very special service that if you didn't watch from our synod on Easter Sunday, you may want to take a look. All that and more coming right up. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs, and this is episode 627. And we're recording this on April 22nd, 2020. I had to think closely about what year it was. Things kind of running together these days. Joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally, how are you?
I'm good, Martin. And this is a year I read somewhere that will fill many pages in the history books because it's a year like none other. So some places I've seen, can we press the reset on 2020? But that is impossible, so...
Yeah, one way to open a new decade, huh?
Really? Yeah.
I think our journals are filled with all kinds of interesting entries these days. So, well, that's a blessing, I think. Mm-hmm. That's the way I'm looking at it, at least. And we are blessed today, speaking of blessings, to have Jason Schmidt joining us, one of our semi-regular classroom technology correspondents from northern Wisconsin. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Martin, we call it Northern Wisconsin, too. Don't tell my wife I said that, though.
Yeah, I was wondering what Northern Wisconsin is called Northern Wisconsin. You can get far further north than you are, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, quite farther. Yes.
How are you?
You guys are weathering the storm up there in Northern Wisconsin without too much trouble?
Yeah, not too bad. You know, it's been kind of, we've had, you know, just like everybody else in Wisconsin and 40 other states across the country, you know, we've got our stay-at-home orders and all of that kind of stuff going on and, you know, just kind of trying to deal with everything that goes along with quarantine and all that stuff. And, you know, we'll be fine. It's going to work out good, but, you know, it's in God's hands. So, you know.
There's that sunshine we love from
Jason. That's right.
And, you know, I've heard a lot from friends who have little children, you know, being locked up in the house with these little kids. But you probably have it a little challenging, too, with three teenagers at your house, huh?
My kids are handling everything pretty fine.
Awesome.
You know, they're just pretty self-sufficient and easy to handle anyways. You know, because of their ages, I don't envy, I would not be doing well if my kids were much younger than they are or anything like that. That would be a little bit difficult, but yeah, it is good. It is good to have older kids. And my wife and I have decided that we're much better parents for older children than we are for younger children.
Yeah.
We've got a little experience too. I think that has something to do with it.
Right. Right.
At least you can tell yourself that. Regardless of age, I think everybody's finding themselves in front of computers a lot more and in front of microphones and video cameras and kind of the new normal these days for student, teacher, and workers alike. I think if Apple got a penny for every time I saw somebody on TV with an AirPods Pro sticking out of their ears on an interview, they'd be even richer than they are. I think everybody is... really getting used to that. And, you know, everybody's kind of in that podcasting mode. So hopefully we can provide some helpful tips, especially for maybe that new normal of distance learning and flipping classrooms and using technology to reach out to students if they can't be kind of in the in the same place at the same time. We were thinking that maybe there are a number of topics, and we'll maybe take some liberties and wander around, you know, some of these topics a little bit as we talk with Jason today. But maybe some of the hidden costs of some of these free offerings and the cost of maybe jumping into some of these technologies because you had to. Jason, before the show, you said you had an 18-month plan that became an 18-day plan, and that doesn't always play well with getting technologies prepped and ready and useful for staff and faculty to use.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things, that's a challenge of somebody in a position like mine, or really any kind of a leadership position within a school, is, you know, how when we try to do something new, or when we try to change the way that we're doing things, how sustainable is it for us to continue to do something, you know, like, I hate to say this because we just hear it so much, but you know, with the situation that we're in, and you know how this is, we really are living history, and you know, we will not, hopefully, you know, God willing, see anything like this in our lives again. But you know, along with all of this is some really unique opportunities to try some new stuff, and you know, there are as many tools as there are, as the day is long, kind of a thing. And, you know, I worry sometimes, not worry, but, it's kind of top of mind for me with, just thinking about how do we continue with some of these things? You know, there are great tools out there, but, you know, we have finite resources, and what is this going to look like, you know, 6 months from now, a year from now, 18 months, you know, what's the long view on all of this? And, you know, there's so many unknowns right now that we just don't know. But, you know, with a lot of these things that are out there, I get concerned that teachers might get used to something, and then now when it goes away, we don't have the resources to be able to continue with that. So how are those skills transferable is what I'm hoping for.
You know, Jason, I think if I count up correctly, this is our 13th year of Wells Tech podcasting, and you've been along for the ride for almost all 13 of those years. And if I were to tally it up, thousands of different software tools and things that we've been excited about, things we've talked about on the podcast over all those years. And I'm always a little bit leery when we talk about new things, because it involves an investment to go to a new platform, to use a new tool. And sometimes those investments pay off, and sometimes those investments don't, and you've put a lot into it, and maybe you can't get it back out of it or something like that. And I'm talking a software platform, for instance, some of these new platforms that are in the cloud that people are getting free access to, and maybe they fall in love with, or they spend a lot of time developing for it, and then the whole thing kind of flitters away, or is too expensive when it comes down to actually paying for. And so it's a big thing to invest in a tool. And I'm guessing you're kind of weighing that pretty heavily as you make recommendations.
Yep, that's exactly it. You know, and it's not just an investment of money, but it's an investment of time. It's an investment of attention. It's an investment of, you know, even just a lot of these things are just turning into marketing tools. You know, if you look at some of these subscription services that are offering free trials, they really haven't changed their business model at all, because they've always given a 90-day trial. They're just calling it, hey, for COVID, we're giving you 90 days free. So, you know, they're just repackaging something that they've always done anyways, which, you know, it's kind of, you know, I get why they're doing it. You know, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to do it that way, you know, just from a business perspective. And, you know, please, nobody get mad at me, because I fully want these companies to make money. You know, I don't think that they should not make a profit, because that's, you know, that's why they're in business. But you know, I think that puts a lot of burden on teachers just to make sure that the things that they're doing with these platforms that, you know, like I said before, that they're sustainable. So, you know, if you put something into it, what can you get out of it? And, you know, I don't think that there's anything wrong with using, you know, a premium tool for this period of time, you know, just because it meets a particular need that you have right now. And maybe that need changes, you know, 6 months down the road or next school year or whatever. You know, then I think that's okay. But, you know, where it gets to be kind of an issue or can be troublesome for some people is if we, we're using these tools and now, you know, I want to use this in my regular classroom. So now how are we going to work out that investment part of it?
One thing that occurred to me as you were talking, Jason, is that some of these tools, the teachers are having to turn on a dime, of course. So some of them have never even thought about any kind of distance learning or teaching virtually or whatever. And they're just super happy to find tools that they can easily implement, understand, and the kids like. So that's a win. So they're trying to kind of make do with the best that they can, and they get excited about it and use it. And there isn't maybe a long-term strategy for it, as you're talking about. So you can't really blame them, you know, for this, but we're going to have to spend probably our summer figuring out, you know, or they're going to have to spend their summer figuring out what fits, what doesn't fit, you know, how does this map to, you know, maybe a different scenario or scenarios when we come back. And that's part of the, I think that's part of the worry too, that nobody knows what that looks like. So you're having to figure out a lot of this stuff, and we'll have to figure out a lot of this stuff on the fly for months and maybe even years to come.
Maybe if there's a silver lining to it all, at least people are doing something. So you have a baseline.
Yeah.
To start from, to figure these things out. Our church actually had our first Zoom Bible class on Sunday, and I think there were over 50 connections to it, you know, so filled up multiple screens of images and things like that. And the pastor was kind of like, it's really hard. I can't hear you, you know, be sure to ask questions, wave at the camera if you want me to turn your microphone on, you know. Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, we'll evaluate and we'll figure out what went well with this and what didn't, and we'll adjust. And I think that's what teachers are having the privilege of doing, if you can look at it that way, that they are doing something and they'll be able to hone in on best practices and things like that.
Jason, I'm assuming that part of your silver lining is that there are some teachers who are now kind of got their eyes open a little bit to some of the possibilities of some of these digital tools, right?
Yeah, you know, the biggest benefit that I've seen just in my work, but, you know, in general as well, has been this is really given me an opportunity to build some relationships with people that kind of either had walls up for me before or just didn't really see the need for, you know, to work with me on something. Like, you know, they're fine people and, you know, we get along just fine. But now they're, you know, it's kind of seen more as an essential role that I play.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other part of it that has been kind of fun for me, and I don't know if you guys are having a similar experience, but past graduate students, so I've been teaching classes for MLC for, I don't know, probably 7-8 years now. Maybe I think it's even more than that. I don't even know. But I've been teaching MLC classes for a long time, and I get, you know, students from years ago are reaching out to me and say, hey, I have this question about this thing. Can you help me? And, you know, it's just really, it's that part of it for me has been really, really fun and fulfilling to kind of rekindle some of those relationships or, you know, develop some that may not have been there in the first place. And, you know, just really having an opportunity to grow there has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, someone said to me, you've been preparing for this your whole life. And that's true of you for sure, Jason, that you're in a great place to support those. And that's a huge blessing, I'm sure, to many. My teacher friends are out there slugging away. I think one of the comments we talked about in our show planning was it's like preparing for a sub every single day, double the load. And one teacher friend said, 7 videos recorded for next week, only 5 to go. You know, so, I mean, the work is heavy and real, and teachers are also trying to be moms to their kids in the same household and, you know, keep everything, all these balls up in the air. So kudos to them for the tremendous workload and for banding together and seeking out help from people like Jason and others through different forums and things.
Jason, one thing I wanted to ask you, and I've observed this and talked to a number of teachers as well, is that there are a couple of different ways to approach this. One would be trying to just basically teach class the same way you did, except over video conference. Mm-hmm. So we're going to meet at 11, and it's a 40-minute class, and here's the assignment, and here's the lesson, and just go about your, submit your homework, et cetera, et cetera. And then there's others who are kind of taking the more flipped classroom approach, like, you know, Sally's teacher friend, where she's recording a bunch of videos, you know, and I'm assuming that's for kind of a flipped scenario, and then maybe touching base via video conference, just kind of maintain the contact, so it's not truly a totally asynchronous experience. There is some synchronicity, so to speak, you know, in the class. What do you see that your teachers are doing, or is any guidance being provided for how to do this thing?
You know, just how the situation is changing for everybody constantly, it's changing in our district too. The teachers that I'm working with, have their expectations have been modified a little bit. So first, you know, we were just trying to offer enrichment opportunities, mm-hmm. and, you know, not necessarily introducing anything new. And now kind of, you know, like 3.5 weeks in, we had a change in policy because there is now, you know, we're not coming back for the rest of the year. So, so that has caused kind of a shift in the way that we're going about things. From the start though, we have kind of discouraged the synchronous, meetings all the time on a consistent basis, like with large groups of students. Mostly because our kids just were not prepared to be able to participate in something like that. You know, they've never done anything like that. They have no idea about what the etiquette is or anything. So, a lot of my teachers have been, just working with small groups. And, you know, in a typical day, you know, they might have, like, an elementary teacher might have prepared 6 lessons, and they've cut that back down to 2 or 3. And then within those lessons, they're meeting with small groups to, you know, to work with those kids and still kind of foster some of those relationships. So, that seems like it's been working reasonably well for our elementary kids, but we're having trouble. And I don't know, it's different in the public schools, than it is in any of our Wells schools. But, you know, we're having trouble with getting kids to show up and actually do things. So, you know, whether that's, you know, just logging into the learning management system and checking on what stuff they have to do, we're really struggling with, you know, 50% of our kids are doing that. So, you know, because only 50% of the kids are going in there, teachers aren't killing themselves to make sure that they're preparing all of this really great stuff and things like that. So it kind of turns into a little bit of a domino effect, where, you know, I have a lot of my secondary teachers are probably trying to go more along the lines of, well, this is what I would do in class. So here's a slideshow. I'll record a video and let people watch that. But, you know, they're not really, and for good reason, trying real hard to just revolutionize the way that they're teaching. And, you know, who knows how much of it's going to stick, but, you know, we're thinking about it anyways and trying.
Yeah. I can reinforce what your public school teachers are experiencing. I'm taking a class through the local technical college this semester. The class started off with about 20 people. And when we finally reconvened and had a Zoom call together, there were maybe 8 or 9 people in the first week. And then the last 2 weeks, there's been 3 of us there.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, are there really just 3 people left in the class? And he's like, no, there's 14. Some of them I can't get in touch with at all.
Wow.
You know, I've reached out multiple ways, and others just don't like this format. And so they're learning differently, you know, so it's a real challenge, and it's not easy to prepare for people learning in all these different ways, and
mm-hmm.
real challenge.
One thing that maybe would be interesting to talk about is asking the question, you know, what should our administrators be doing now, both now, like in the moment, but also in the next coming months? Is there a way that they should be thinking about this and talking to their faculties, and then also what they do when they go back to their office trying to figure out, you know, what's next?
You know, I think right now the biggest thing that our teachers need is just that emotional and spiritual and psychological support.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all got thrown into a situation that we were completely not prepared for, and very few of us have even trained for. And even somebody like, you know, like me or the two of you who are experienced online instructors, like, we know what it takes to prepare some of this stuff. And, you know, to throw something together the way that we have is really stressful for a lot of people. So, you know, for administrators to understand that and, you know, just focus on building people up, keeping morale high, and, you know, taking care of their people, I think is definitely should be a high priority for the current crisis. Now, what that looks like in May, you know, after or June or whenever, you know, when we're done with our online learning, you know, there's definitely a lot of lessons to be learned, I think, over the course of the past couple of months. You know, when it comes to technology integration and things like that, I think we're exposing the mindset of a lot of teachers through this whole process. You know, whether they're willing to adapt and try new things, or, you know, they just kind of want to do the things that they've always done. You know, I'm wondering if we're going to see a lot of people participating in professional development a little bit more voluntarily, or seeking out additional help, you know, reaching out to people that they know that are really, you know, really good at the things that they need to learn, have those skills, and are willing to transfer, and that kind of stuff. But, you know, I just wonder what this is going to do to the kind of staffing that we have in our schools too. You know, if we're going to lose people over this because they just don't want to learn these new skills, or what, you know, what our classrooms are going to look like. There's so many unknowns out there.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time and invested a lot of educational resources in what it looks like to do education well in a classroom setting. How you, I don't know even all the fancy terms, but the pedagogy that you use to mm-hmm. to teach young minds. And we haven't, as a group, collectively invested that time in online learning, you know. So there's a lot of teachers out there that are just totally out of context and don't really know how to adjust and how to do it well and how to help the students achieve what they need to and stuff. So learning experience for all of us. And I think, yeah, encouragement from administrators is definitely great advice.
Good discussion. I think, again, work in progress. We all are. This is just God's way of saying, yep, here's another opportunity to do that. And prayer, devotion, you know, staying in the Word for encouragement, encouraging one another. Those are all things that we should be doing every day anyway, regardless of the circumstances. So just another opportunity to practice our faith, which is the good news. Mm-hmm. Thanks for your insights, Jason. Really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
News and tech is our next segment, and you know, there is stuff going on, tech and otherwise. And Apple was in the news this past week. They launched a new phone, which a lot of people are excited about, mostly because of the price, the iPhone SE. I wouldn't say that it is a super cheap phone, but it is by Apple standards, extremely cheap, $399, starting at $399. And I think they up their storage capacity, their base storage capacity with this 4.7 inch Retina HD display, which is, I think, what the iPhone 11 is, not the Pro. And they put their A13 chip, and that doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but it's basically the same chip that's in their 11 Pro models. So they didn't cheap out on the guts inside. The camera, single lens, doesn't have all the cameras that the Pro would have, but they do make good cameras anyway. That depth control, portrait lighting, all that good stuff is available in the camera. And good battery life, we understand. And just kind of a nice smaller phone, and at a nice price point. It sounds like this is going to probably be appealing to a lot of different people. So it does have that Touch ID. I don't know if does it have Face ID.
It just has the Touch ID. Yeah, has the Touch ID with the fingerprint sensor.
Right, which a lot of people actually prefer. I think some have struggled with the Face ID. But so that's the news coming out. Go ahead,
yeah,
Sally.
Face ID isn't working well when you're wearing a mask.
Yeah, I heard that, too. Worth. Yep. There's always that. Who knew we'd have to worry
Who
about
knew?
That?
Yeah.
So most of the same features. So this sounds like something that I think a lot of people are going to gravitate toward. You have your choice of colors, as long as you like black, white, or red. Those are all available, and all the Apple goodness in there too. So that's the news. I don't know if it's available. If it's available for pre-order now, I'm just on their page now. I don't know when it would ship, but it's got to be not too far in the future. So take a look. We'll have a link in the show notes.
And I have a piece of news in tech that I thought was real interesting involving Apple as well, but also our friends at Google. So Apple and Google actually announced a partnership of sorts, which is kind of odd to hear with two of the biggest competitors in the market partnering together. But this partnership is meant to allow our mobile devices to track contacts, basically. So using Bluetooth technology, pinging off of phones that are near you, being able to track contacts so that if you were diagnosed with COVID-19, you'd know who you had came in contact with. Interesting concept, maybe raises a little concern about security or whatever, but this article that we'll point to from Inc. magazine kind of states that that's not really a concern. They aren't doing a lot of invasive security things, just more like who you've come in contact with so that it can be used and protect the user privacy at the same time. So the fact that Google and Apple are doing it kind of takes care of the vast majority of mobile devices around the entire globe. And so this could be a real game changer in the fight against COVID-19. So interesting developments.
Any concerns, any privacy concerns there, Jason, for you? Does this raise any red flags?
I didn't go through and read the article, so I wouldn't, I'm not completely sure how the technology works and what information they're collecting and using. I think that, anything that can track this kind of stuff and, assist with, tracking contacts and things like that, I get a little bit leery with that, even if the data is stored in a place in a neutral location or whatever. I'm not sure how they would correlate and keep it anonymized. That would be my big concern. But at the same time, Google knows everything about me anyway. So, if I had a problem with privacy, I would not
Jason.
Be.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, so just to elaborate a little bit more, the concept would be that you would install an app, and like I said, it would do this pinging off of other people that have that app, and you could indicate in the app that you've been diagnosed, and it would automatically flow through to the people that have come in contact with you. Mm-hmm. It says the companies aren't uploading your information to some government server to identify who has the virus. And it's very similar to what Apple's used already for their Find
My Phone.
They do
say it's end-to-end encrypted here. Apple doesn't even know your location. But I think the power in these things is that everybody has to use it, and that's probably not going to happen for privacy concerns or whatever. So we'll see how useful it is. But I applaud the effort, and making these tools available is the first step. I think that's it for news and tech. Let's move on to Wells Now.
And this is the time of year that we talk about MLC Day. MLC Day has been happening for a good 5 years or so, where they take one day in early May each year to celebrate MLC. And it's kind of gained momentum over the years. Schools and churches and people across Wells around the globe are sending their love and admiration for the work done at Martin Luther College. MLC Day is coming up for 2020 on May 6th, but May 6, 2020 is unlike any other MLC Day that we've experienced to date because it's in the middle of a global pandemic, obviously, with our MLC students not even on campus. So MLC has announced that they do plan to do distance graduation and call day services. So we'll be talking more about that, I'm sure, as the graduation date approaches. But in the meantime, MLC Day is going to be focused on those graduating seniors and just trying to make their graduation moment as positive and exciting as we can from a distance and safer at home. So they are providing printable signs. They're encouraging people to send videos and prayers, all the same things you do on MLC Day, but perhaps focus towards the graduates as a group or a particular graduate that you may know, where you can send some special love their direction. So just a day of celebration of the graduating class of 2020 from Martin Luther College. It's coming up May 6th. You can learn more at mlcday.com, and we'll include a link to that in the show notes.
Very nice. Thank you. Blessings on that day for sure. I think we're to the section in our show where we have picks of the week. Guests first. Jason, you have a pick this week?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, with all of the screen recording and everything that people have going on, I thought I'd bring up another tool. One that I've actually been using for several years now is loom.com. The reason that I use this over something like Screencastify or Screencast-O-Matic or any of those other tools that are out there is it's just dead simple. It's an extension that you add to Chrome, and then, you push a button, you start recording, it hosts everything for you. Sharing is super easy. It sounds really kind of dumb, but, I like the fact that my video, like if I have my webcam on, it puts me in a circle. I like to be in a circle rather. It's not just hip to be square. It's hip to be circle. So I really like Loom. I've been using it for years. And one of the big reasons that I'm endorsing it now is services like Screencastify and things like that. Like, you know, there are a lot of companies that are making their premium for free during COVID, whatever. But Loom has actually made their professional product free for education forever. So you can sign in, create an account, and then there's just a real quick verification process that you go through. But then you have a pro subscription, so you can make unlimited videos. You can use their desktop client, which is actually very excellent, especially if you're running on a Mac. So, Martin, I know you're an Apple guy. Mm-hmm. You might want to check out Loom's desktop app. Really slick, super super easy, and does a really nice job. So. It gets my sunshine stamp of approval, to
five
go
sons.
With loom.com. Five yeah. sons.
Right. Let me ask you a question, Jason. I've not heard of this, which is interesting, but, so the browser extension, Yep. I'm assuming that when you use that, you are restricted to recording what's in your browser, not your full desktop, right? But you would use a desktop app for desktop?
No. I think the extension gives access to the whole desktop
as well. Oh, really? Cool.
Where the desktop extension or the desktop app works really well is if you either want to record with your webcam, because then you can make it full screen, because otherwise it's, you know, if you're recording with your webcam, you can just tell it to do the webcam with the extension, but it's still the little window.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use the desktop app, it makes it full screen. And then with the desktop app, you can record a region of your screen.
Right. Okay. Makes sense. Yeah, I've been a screencast-o-matic guy for a number of years now. I pay for it. It's not super expensive, but I've been really happy with it. But I'm going to look at that. That's cool. Thank you for the tip.
Yeah, of course.
Sally.
Well, mine is a blog post I wanted to point people to. It's called 5 Ways to Pastor Your Chat Room, and it comes from the people at Hillsong, which is an Australian-based
huge,
kind of a mega church.
Yeah.
And interestingly, I have a personal tie to this article because my cousin's son, so probably once removed or something like that, he's actually in school down in Australia. He went down to Australia to go to college, particularly because of being engaged by the Hillsong congregation and being a part of that. And he is one of the authors of this blog post, 5 Ways to Pastor Your Chat Room. So there's the personal tie. I thought that was super cool. And just a shout out to Thomas for his part in that. I think it has application to us. The concept is the chat maybe that's ongoing as you're having a worship service or something like that, an online worship service. But we have chat in a variety of ways, and we have, you know, Facebook groups that we have conversations in and things like that. And I think these concepts can apply in a lot of those settings as well. So the first thing they list is that I am the digital front row. And I think what they mean by that is kind of being a leader and encouraging as you moderate whatever conversations are going on, and also replicating the values that, you know, we hope to show and see experienced in whatever conversations that are happening through chat, so that you can kind of lead the way and show people how to do it the right way within a chat room or whatever. I'm a human being, not a bot. So, you know, even if you are a moderator and your title says moderator, not your real name or whatever, just showing your personality and being not too robotic about your responses and things like that. It says, out of the overflow of my heart, my hands type. So just as you're moved to respond in real life to things, you're going to show care and love and connect to people in these online conversations as well. And then the last two, I choose to see the person behind the profile, and wherever the platform goes, I go. So, you know, just knowing that anything can happen, just like in real life when you're having face-to-face interactions with people and being able to be comfortable to follow through in the chat scenarios with important encouragement or whatever it may be. So, yeah, I think it's an interesting read and certainly has some application to all of us adjusting to this new ministry platform that we're all kind of propelled into. So, yay for Thomas for being part of that.
Hey, nice family connection. Good, mm-hmm. good find, too. I like this. Mm-hmm. Our picks of the week have just kind of worked out this week where Jason had a software pick, Sally had a blog post, and I have a hardware pick. Mm-hmm. And this work from home deal, I kind of have a temporary setup. I'm working off of more of an antique-ish dining room table. And one of the challenges with working off of those kinds of surfaces is the wood grain sometimes wreaks havoc with a mouse. And the mouse that I normally use at work, which is a little bit different surface, more of a you know, less grainy surface, was not a problem. But when I brought that home, boy, all heck broke loose. So I've been on the hunt for a new mouse and did a lot of research and share that here. But the one that I finally settled on was from Logitech. I think they're kind of the king of mice, so to speak. The one I picked was the MX Master 2S, which is a little bit older model, 2, 3, 4 years even, because there is a Master 3 out, I think, this past year. But super pleased with it. It's a little on the pricey side. I think you can get it for about $75, $80. It is a, it works in two ways. It can be a Bluetooth mouse, or it has a little, transmitter that you can plug into as a USB little dongle, which is what I use. I think you have a little bit less interference there, a little bit better connection. So I thought maybe that was one of the problems I was having too, where I was having some Bluetooth interference, which can get a little dicey depending on how many devices you have. The mouse is one that's bigger than I'm used to using, but I'm kind of getting used to that. I like it, kind of cups your hand and forces you to kind of be in a good mousing position. And goodness knows we do a lot of mousing these days with a lot of the graphical user interfaces that are so popular these days. Has just a ton of buttons, and they're all programmable, so you can make the buttons do what you want. The scroll wheel can be either smooth or ratcheted, if you know what I mean, so you can click that on and off depending on what your preference is. I like the smoother roll where it doesn't make any noise. You've got, as I mentioned, programmable buttons on the top, three of them there, two on the side, another scroll wheel on the side. And the precision is really nice. It has kind of Teflon-y, really hard surfaced wheels that don't, or pads on the bottom that don't get stuck and they don't get all mucked up for whatever reason. Sometimes I've had problems with those before. It also lets you connect to three different devices. So there's a little button on the bottom that you press, and you can have it paired to three different devices. One, all three Bluetooth, or one with a transmitter and two with Bluetooth, so you can use it on multiple machines. It also has software that allows you to use the mouse just by sliding it across your screen to an adjacent screen, a different computer. You have to have the software installed, and you have to have it connected via Bluetooth to that. So you can actually, move the mouse, from left to right, and then go to another device on your left or right. And it has some capabilities to do cutting and pasting. So between the two separate machines, which is kind of nice if you work on multiple machines. So high praise for this one, the Logitech MX Master 2S. Battery life, if there is one knock, and this is very minor, it has the micro USB charger. I think the M3 has a USB 3 charger, but you rarely have to plug this thing in. It gets weeks and weeks and weeks of life on just on a single charge. So really happy. I don't like the wired mouses. It just kind of clutters up the desk. And if it works and on the surface and is reliable and tracks nicely, those are my major requirements, and this one checks all the boxes.
Very good. Might be in the market for a new mouse. Who knows?
Ministry Resources is our next segment, and this comes from our good friends at Luther Preparatory School. Jason, you want to introduce this one?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I have two kids that have been attending Luther Prep this year. And one of the things, and my wife and I are both alumni too. And one of the things that we have really been appreciating more and more through this whole pandemic is the opportunity to worship daily with our kids. So we have time blocked in our schedule every day at 9 o'clock. Luther Prep will stream their chapel service, and there's always a hymn. They put the words on the screen, so you can sing along with that, and then listen to the faculty there just offer some comfort and spiritual guidance and edification. It's a great way to start the day and have things going for the kids. So 9 o'clock every morning, Luther Prep will be broadcasting their chapel service on live stream, and we've got a link in the show notes.
That's very cool. Now, I didn't think about that, but in the spring, don't seniors do chapel at prep normally? So I assume that's not possible anymore.
Yeah.
Or am I thinking of that backwards?
No, you're right, but it was usually evening chapels.
Oh, that that's right.
Yeah, and as far as I know, they haven't been streaming evening chapel. I don't know. Maybe they are, and we're just not paying attention. But yeah, okay. the morning for sure has always been faculty.
Very good. Awesome. I have not watched one, but I'm going to, and I think if anybody else is interested, just go to the show notes page. And you can find the link there. Speaking of the show notes page, that's also where you can contribute community feedback. That's wellstech.wells.net. We're on all the social networks. Email wellstech@wells.net. And you can get in touch with us there. Sally, who used those mechanisms to connect with us this past week?
Well, first off, we're going to talk about a post from the Wells Intersections Facebook group,
which is another place.
Great place to have conversations around technology and ministry, moderated by Pastor James Aderman. And one of the biggest things that's happened since we last had our podcast was the Synod sponsored Together at the Tomb Easter worship service, mm-hmm. which happened on Easter evening. By all accounts and from everyone I've talked to, was just an excellent worship experience for all who participated. And part of that was because they had pre-recorded the worship service, and it was done so very well. Everyone was super impressed with it, from comments about the words being on the screen. So they did it almost kind of like a closed captioning with some really nice fonts, and the speaker words were on a black background and white font, and the responsive words were on a white background and black font, and it was just really easy to follow, to sing along with, all of those kind of things. So the nerds in us wanted to know how they pulled all that off, and questions were floating around, like I said, on that Wells Intersections Facebook group, and we heard from Brian Erbs, who is actually the owner of Goldwing Productions, the production company that was involved in the worship streaming. And he says, "Thanks for watching, everyone. My video production company produced last night's services so I can answer questions for you. As you guessed, the service itself was pre-recorded, and the Q&A section, which was at the end of the live stream, was actually live. For the service, we had four cameras set up, and they used a Sony FS5, a Canon C100, a Sony 7III, and a Canon M50, so a variety of cameras used. The four cameras were operated by two people, so part of the challenge was there was a liturgist and a person who actually preached the worship, Pastor Trepto, and then there were people involved in the music. I want to say there were maybe five people involved in the music that was part of the worship. So, and you had to stay under this 10-person limit. So they only had two people to do the camera work. Everything was edited in Adobe Premiere Pro, and some of the design and creation of original motion graphics came from Alexandra Ramsey Creative. The font was chosen by our Wells Creative Services Coordinator, Brianna Lombrecht, who's just a super talented graphic artist that's part of the Wells Communication Services office. And then she also created the Together at the Tomb image. And then they actually switched to live streaming with the seminary people running the live stream for the Q&A portion. And I'm going to pause there because I got a cough. Sorry.
I can... I'll jump in and, you know, kudos to all the people that were involved with that production, because it took a little bit of a village to make this thing happen, all the way from Professor or President Trepto's sermon, which was wonderfully delivered. And mm-hmm. if you've never spoken to kind of an empty room before and delivered a sermon, you know, that's a challenge to begin with. But Jeff Mitchell, the technology director there at the seminary, who was managing the live stream, and Lee Hitter and his team, and basically everybody who was involved pulled it off. And I think everybody, like you said, Sally, had just really engaging experience.
Definitely. So thanks for that opportunity to worship together. It was wonderful and edifying. Had a great Easter morning worship, and then to come together as a synod that way was really exciting. Couple more community feedback items to mention. Julie Duran shared a website, LutheranSynodPublishing.com. And once I dug around a little, I realized that one of our Wells Tech friends, Pastor Jeff Hendricks, is the person behind this website. And they have church year icons, logos and designs, and video production examples out on the website. So check it out. There may be things that can be a blessing to you and your ministry. And thanks, Julie, very much for sharing that. And then finally, a mention of news out of Google, something that's coming out with the new version of Chrome, and you can actually get it or activate it already, even if you don't have the upgrade. It's Google Chrome Tab Groups. And this allows you to kind of group together tabs. They get an underlined color that indicates that they're all part of a group. And they're more easily identifiable. And this is really for those people that have 200 tabs open at once or 50 tabs open at once or whatever it may be, where you're working on different projects and need to jump between them. And it gets to the point where you can't tell which tab is which when you have so many open. And so definitely check out this article if that speaks to you and the way that you work in Google Chrome. I will tell you that at this point, you aren't able to save your groups and you can't collapse them like down into one and expand them, that kind of thing. So there are some ways that I'm sure they'll be enhancing it in the future, but it is a very cool feature in Google Chrome. That's what I have for community feedback for this week.
Very good. And video of the week.
Well, maybe you won't be surprised by this, given that we just talked about the empty at together at the tomb worship service that happened with the synod, but we wanted to feature in particular the hymn of the day, which was "I Know That My Redeemer Lives," and was done in a very special way. Members from across the synod sent in video singing that hymn, and that was all kind of joined together by this production company into a compilation of all these different singers from across the synod. I'm going to be honest, guys. I don't know about you, but I cried, and it wasn't even just like that little trickle tear. It was like I wept when this happened. I boo-hooed.
Needed a couple Kleenexes.
I saw my friends. Yeah. I did. It got to me after being alone and not having that Easter morning, you know, common worship that we all love and treasure so much. Mm-hmm. To see my friends in that video just really, it was very, very special. It's very well done, and I will be watching it many, many times in the future, so definitely worth checking out. We also have a link to the full worship service, so if you didn't get to see the worship service on Easter evening, you can watch it on the Wells Tech page or watch it again and be uplifted by it. So check those out at wellstech.wells.net.
Very nice. Thank you so much, Jason, for joining us. It's always a pleasure to hear your perspectives and have you join us to talk tech and education. Thanks.
Oh, I appreciate the opportunity. You guys keep on inviting me back. So, hey, that's a good thing.
That's right. We do appreciate it. And Sally, thanks for all your work. And thanks to all of our listeners each and every week. We'll be doing show 628 in the very near future, so stay tuned for that and share it with a friend. Thank you for being here. Stay safe and know the peace that only Christ can provide. Bye-bye.